Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 15th, 2016. You're listening to the best poker cast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott, not Powerball winner Scott.
Scott, not Powerball winner Scott? You want to do the intro over there?
No, I'm sorry. I'm just despondent that I spent $9,000 on tickets and I got a $4 Powerball over three drawings.
Yeah, there were some guys in Tampa Bay or something that spent like $76,000.
They got their odds down to 1 in 4,000 and still got bupkis.
Still got bupkis.
They probably won some other thing,
but they didn't win.
Didn't get the big one.
No, maybe they got their money back. That'd be interesting to find out if they got their money back.
Yeah.
You know, $76,000, you get 1 in 4,000 odds. Huh.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, I never play any of these lotteries or anything like that. Like I always tell everybody, I'm not a gambler. You know, I mean, I play poker, but I'm not a gambler. I mean, I'm
not a gambler, but when someone's giving me a chance at 1.6.
Exactly. So I played, which I never do.
Standards a little bit, right?
Yeah. I mean, if it's 1.6 billion and I can buy an island, I might gamble. But if it's, you know, you might be able to retire or sell the company or something. Well, I don't think it's worth playing. Yeah, but
measly 40 million.
Can't. Yeah, 40 million is not enough.
Right.
Yeah, before the show, I love your saying, I think it's best to play when it's 40 million because no one else is going to hit it. Yeah, neither are you. It's the same odds. The numbers don't change. That was like the stupidest thing you've ever said since, hey, you want to start a company.
All right, so it's less likely that I'm going to have to share that 40 million.
So what? I would share 1.6 billion with three people.
To myself rather than 500 million sharing it.
Okay, so like instead of sharing it with one person and made it 40 million, you could share it with three people and have 1.6 billion. Scott. It scares me do the books.
Here's the thing. I've learned everything I know about the Powerball from Facebook, so, you know.
Oh, man. We got to stop from you doing the books now. I got to see if the accountant will take over everything.
No, really, we got to get you on Facebook at some point just so you can see how stupid people are. It's ridiculous. So, but
I know how stupid people are. I don't need Facebook to do that.
Well, it's a good reminder every day.
Okay.
How intensely intelligent the two of us are. Well, me mostly. But. Anyway, we talked about the Powerball. So I thought it might be fun to talk about this. You know, because almost everybody in the world played this, right?
Right.
So I was kind of wondering, I mean, obviously you spend all this time thinking about if you hit this, what you're going to do with the money, right?
That's right.
Part of the joy, right? So I hate these haters out there that you can't win, you're just wasting money, blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, but $2 to have 24 hours, you can just dream about having $1.6 billion. I think that's worth $2.
It's worth $2.
All right.
It is.
So anyhow, so I was wondering, you know, everybody's like, and then you have all these wet blankets that are like, oh, yeah, the winning lotteries could be the worst thing that ever happens to you. You could be so unhappy, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, right. But, and they're all like, you know, you need to get financial advisors, all this, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
It's all true, right?
But, yeah.
So that made me start thinking, you know, poker players, and I love you guys, I love us, right? But we're not always the most responsible people when it comes to money, right?
Yeah.
Is as much as we like to say this is a skill-based game and blah, 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 we know there's lots of poker players that take that $500 they just went at the 1-2 table and blow it in three rolls of the dice at the craps table, right?
Right.
So I was just curious what we thought would happen. It was three people. We don't know. Maybe all three of them were poker players, probably know, right?
But, that'd be awesome.
But let's just assume for a minute that one person won the whatever the 1 point, I didn't check what it was, 1.6 billion. And he was a poker player. What would that do for your game?
Wow. Well, I know for
me, let me go to assume that you're probably going to play more now, right? Because you're not tied down to this pesky job thing, right?
Yeah, and not worried about
you don't have to mow the lawn anymore,
yeah,
or vacuum the house or wash the car, you know. So you really had nothing to do all day but whatever you want to do.
I think I would go way up in limits, lose $100,000 or so, then go right back down to 1.3 and then not care about it. You know, I would go way up in limits just to see what it's like to play, you know, at that level, because, you know, you always hear about how fantastic they are. Would it really be that different? Would you, if you weren't worried about the money, would you play properly now? Would you finally get it all, you know? So I would try that probably. I know I would enter the World Series main event, maybe even a high roller where there's only like 30 guys in it or something, just to see how I would do, that kind of thing. And, you know, donate to the cause, let the money stay in the community, that kind of thing. Because I know I'm probably not, but I never know. I can go on a run. Who knows? But, you know, I'd enter the World Series main event. I think I can cash in that. That thing would, you know, there's so many people in it. I think I can last 3,000 people or 8,000 people. So that's probably what I would do. But I think in the end, I'd probably just go like play like 2.5 or 5.10 and just be real comfortable. I mean, look at Bill Gates. It's not about the money.
Yeah,
you know,
I was gonna bring that up. So I'm glad you did. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying he plays for the enjoyment of the game itself, figuring it out and just playing the game. It's got nothing to do with once money has nothing to do with it. You know, I mean, it's not the same as playing for free and trying to, you know, because no one else cares. But
right.
If you're playing at the right level where the 1.2 or the 2.5 or whatever means something to them, then you can play proper poker and really, you know, try to figure
out. I'm glad you brought this up, because I think this is the discussion to have. Because I think most people would answer the question, oh, I would just travel, I'd play at the Aviation Club, and WPT's here, the World Series, blah, 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 right? Yeah. Which makes perfect sense, right? But I think there's a case to be made by, if you look at the Bill Gates, and there's probably other very, very rich people that could do all that stuff, but they choose to play the game properly. And I'm curious how many poker players would actually do that and just save their $1.6 billion for, you know, yachts and
retiring your family.
Like that, right? Yeah,
you know? Yeah, I clearly would do that. I mean, I don't. It doesn't really matter what level I'm playing at for me to enjoy it. You know, it give me a sweat when I play, when I choose to sit down at 2.5 or 5.10, you know, or if I'm playing, you know, 10.20 stud 8 or something. You know, that's stuff that gives me a little bit of a sweat, knowing that I could be done for the night or something if I make a mistake, and I don't want to be done for the night. It's not the money so much as the don't want to be done for the night. But yeah, I would give a shot at the other stuff just to see if I could succeed at it, or just to see what it's like, play with, rub elbows with the guys that, you know, I've been putting in my magazine for 10 years.
Sure.
And then after that, you know, then I'd probably go back down. Because like you said, it's, to me, I just enjoy that level of play. I like the, you know, the players there, they're, some of them are just, they just fly off the handle, and some of them are, you know, they're scared, and they wear their tails on their face, and, you know, I don't know. I don't really need to play for $1 million for it to make it a quality game or exciting or whatever, just because I have $1.6 billion.
I thought about this because, you know, I like my wine, right? And but I also like being cheap, not as cheap as you, but cheap.
Yeah.
And so, you know, somebody at one point told me, you know, hey, anybody can get a $100 bottle of wine that tastes like a $100 bottle of wine. The real enjoyment in being a wine enthusiast is finding that $100 bottle of wine that costs $10.
Yeah.
Right? Because now you got a challenge, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you have all the money in the world, you can buy whatever you want. But as we all know, you know, the things that you earn feel better, or you appreciate them more than the things that you didn't have to earn, right?
Right.
So I think that's a good thing. I mean, any of us could go and play, take all this money and play every big event and probably do pretty well, right?
Right.
I don't think. It's just more of the volume, right? So, but does that feel as good at being a poker player than it would be if you played, like you said, 2.5 at a local room and just crushed it?
Yeah.
And just had time not to actually concentrate on that, which you don't have right now, right?
I also think if winning that kind of cash sort of rejuvenated my passion for going out and playing all the time again and stuff. Because you've got to admit, before we started the magazine, we played more. As you play a lot because you go on the road for the magazine and you're there in the events. But, I mean, as far as here locally, how often we used to go, we would have our home game every month, almost every week.
Yeah.
You know, we would always have a home game, maybe two or three a week sometimes. You know, FASA would have one on a Sunday. We'd have one on a Friday. Also, we're playing two or three times in a week. So if it sort of rejuvenated that in me, and I was like, wow, I really want to get down to the poker room again and whatever, then I might consider trying to get to that level. You know what I mean? Like, not professional, but at least get to the level where you know, I walk into a poker room and I'm playing the 5-10 and I'm the guy that everyone's like, whoa, you know, this guy's a good player again, you know, or something. But right now, I don't play enough where I could do anything like that. But if I had no commitments to anything and I had all the money in the world and I rediscovered that passion again, yeah, I might try to take that money and parlay it into I'm a quality 10-20 player or, you know, or something like that, or a $10,000 buy-in tournament player. You know, I might start over and take a coach on and read the books, all the books again and whatever. I don't know. But right now, I just don't have the time.
Right.
You know, I just don't have the time to do something like that. So I have to do it, you know, like we say, recreationally, you know.
All right. I'd probably do all that, but I have two other things that I'd really do. One, okay. I would buy the World Series of Poker and charge $2 for a soda. That's the only reason I'd want it.
Okay.
Imagine, I mean, poker players, you know, that whole, you know, Phil Hellmuth coming to the World Series on that big throne, right?
Yeah.
That would be me every year if I changed the price of sodas, the World Series poker, to $2. Players would love me. I would be, like, on every poker chip in the country. And if that didn't work out, I would make Andy Beal my bitch. You want to play the corporation? Hey, I'm the new corporation.
Play me in limit hold'em.
You bring that to me.
I don't know, though. Could you handle $100,000, $200,000 blinds with $1.6 billion? It's about the right bankroll for it, but I don't
know. Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if it's not, I'm never going to get the right bankroll, right? So, my one shot.
Make him your bitch. I'll fly to Dallas if it means making you my bitch. That's hilarious.
All right, so real news this week. The Global Poker League will kick off its inaugural season in April with 12 franchises. And here they are. I love it. The Berlin Bears.
Nice.
Hong Kong Dragons.
Nice.
Los Angeles Sunset. Unfortunately, the second S is uppercase.
Capitalized, yeah.
The Las Vegas Moneymakers.
Awesome.
London Royals.
Like London Broil. I mean, I know the Royals because of the family, but I mean, it sounds like London Broils.
I'd actually probably be a bigger fan of his London Broils.
Me too. Big steak on their shirt.
Yeah, right?
That'd be awesome.
The Montreal Nationals. The Moscow Wolverines.
Wolverine.
New York Rounders. Paris Aviators.
Yeah, right.
Let's see.
Get it.
Rome Emperors. Come on.
Got it.
San Francisco Rush.
My favorite team, of course.
Kind of like that one, right? Yep.
Yep.
And the Sao Paulo Metropolitans.
Yes.
And a number of well-known team managers, including Chris Moneymaker, Maria Ho, and Liv Borey. And the teams will hold a live stream draft on February 26th.
Excellent. That's a lot of teams.
Yeah, and then they all had the professional logos made up, too, which, you know, the folks that follow me on Facebook know I'm a big junkie of, like, minor league sports and stuff, not just baseball, but, you know, I'm excited. We got an announcement here later on in the show, but I'm going to get to see a professional indoor lacrosse game coming up, too, which I love that as well, too. So, and I just like the logos. I like looking at logos and come up with the team names and stuff like that. But I will say, to that extent, and we'll talk about the poker here in a minute, there wasn't any one of those logos that I'm like, you know what, I want to buy that shirt.
Oh.
And that's kind of a problem, I think, because that's part of this thing, right? It's trying to make it into something where you have that hat screwed on backwards. I'm like, oh, man, that's a Metropolitan's hat. Awesome, dude.
Yeah.
I just didn't see when the San Francisco Rush was the closest one to something that I thought.
Yeah, baby.
Something I might want. But.
Well, you know, here's the thing, too, is when they put something together like this, they want to get it out there. But they'll probably modify it once it gets going. You know, they might come up with their own versions or... You know, plus it's just a logo. It's not necessarily presented in a shirt yet. You know, they might make the whole shirt. You know what I mean? I think that once you see the apparel, they might do something different than just plopping the logo on it. You know, they might do something cool with it. So
that's true. Yeah.
But I agree with you. I actually saw the logos, too, and I thought San Francisco Rush is the one I'm getting on board with because they're Rush. And, and because, you know, it was the best-looking logo of them, I thought. So... but I like that it had the international flavor, too, that it wasn't just bunch of American things and, like, one in Canada or something.
And I will say I'm disappointed with some of the names, you know. you know, the Las Vegas Moneymakers, obviously, because Chris Moneymaker is a teenager. Right. That's fine. Right. But some of them were kind of boring. The Berlin Bears.
Yeah.
Hong Kong Dragons, that's almost, like, offensive.
Cliché, yeah, offensive, yeah. I know.
London Royal, yeah, a lot of them clichés, right?
Yeah.
Although the Moscow Wolverines, I thought was pretty cool. I don't know if that was all the dawn or not on purpose, or can't imagine it was, but... And even though the Paris Aviators, even though it's a weird take off the Aviation Club, I kind of like that.
Yeah,
that's
like, right. And, like and the Roman Emperors is pretty funny. You know, Sao Paulo Metropolitan, so are we going to call them the Mets? That's kind of weird. Yeah. You know, that is kind of weird.
Anyhow, so they will start the season in April. It's going to end, it sounded like, I believe, in December in a major United States sports stadium to be announced.
Wow.
With that big old cube thing that they have going on. But mostly it's going to be No Limit Hold'em, but some other kind of variations as well, too. And obviously it's always going to be on Twitch, I think. So
cool.
Stay tuned.
Good job.
All right, I love this item, too. You know, when you got to go, Chris...
You gotta go. Yep.
And then you gotta go. That was the story for poker superstar Antonio Esfandiari this week at a big event at PokerStars PCA Series in the Bahamas in the middle of a brutal prop bet with Bill Perkins that required him to lunge everywhere he went for 48 hours. Esfandiari decided he didn't have the strength to lunge his way to the restroom, so he literally pissed his tournament life away by urinating into a container underneath the poker table and getting disqualified for doing so. However, it was good news. He did win the prop bet and then has since apologized for his error in judgment.
Oh, man. I just don't know what to say to this.
You just sound really relaxed right there. Did you just piss in the tube?
I did. I got my little can here of Diet Iced Tea.
Is that why you're on so much pressure to get me to do this show in 1 hour every week? So.
That's right, because I can't. Tell you what, though, that actually is an underlying theme there, buddy. Because whenever we do two shows, like, or something, when you're going away or I'm going away or something, and we take a break in between, man, I need that break. So that could be it. I don't know.
Of course, we're 40-something males. We have, like, no prostate left, right?
So. Here's the deal. One, it reminded me of the... Was it the dealer school owner we had on the show years ago?
The guy stood up and just pissed on the table.
The guy stood up and pissed on the dealer.
Yeah.
Because he kept getting I don't know, he's mad at him for something, but he got a bad hand or folded his hand or something. And I just thought, when I first saw this story, I thought Esfandiari pissed on the table, not at the table. And I was like, what the? But even so, oh man, that's unbelievable. I mean, you got to go. And then you got to go. So, but. I mean, you know, to get disqualified, yeah, I guess so.
You guess so? The guy pissed at the table.
No, I know, but he did it under the table. Nobody saw anything.
Oh, my God. So now you're
no, I'm not.
Encouraging every poker player. And remember how many gross poker players that we have had to sit next to at tables that didn't urinate. They actually had a standard. They're like, man, I don't bathe for weeks. I'm going to eat chicken wings and drop sauce all over the table, but I am going to draw the line and pissing at the table. Now you're telling them, yeah, go ahead.
No, what I'm saying is that Esfandiari should have wore Depends diapers and done that. Then he wouldn't get in trouble for it.
So, all right, so I haven't quite got to the Depends yet. That's probably going to happen next year, maybe.
Uh-huh.
But how absorbent really are they?
Enough to do one
see,
time.
The commercial makes me think it is, but
yeah, one time. I think you know they say one time at the poker table. That's my one time. Is I can only use a diaper once, but really, if I'm in a prop bet like that, I'm wearing a diaper.
Yeah, you're probably right. Probably two errors in judgment, right?
Yeah.
No Depends, and then thinking that's all right. Just to, I mean, and what kind of container?
Yeah, it's got to be like a beer bottle or something. I mean, at least any, you know, it's kind of like Dumb and Dumber, you know, the beer bottles in the car. You know, you can get it done. You can get it done that way. But really, and where do these bets come from? You know, lunging everywhere you go.
I think it's pretty funny, too. I watched a video of them doing it. That's great. That's fine. You know, you can do whatever kind of prop bet you want. But if it requires you to piss at the table, I'm not cool with that.
But they didn't require it. He just wasn't planning well enough. That's all. He should have skipped a couple of hands earlier and gone to the bathroom.
That's the other thing, right? You know, so he got disqualified. Maybe he thought at the minute, in the moment, he thought, you know, hey, you know, I'm Antonio Esfandiari. Everybody's got to think this is funny, right? Or maybe no one's going to notice or what. You know, who knows what goes in your head at that point, right?
Right.
But I think you had to think, you know, hey, maybe there's going to be one or two or 3,000 people here that don't think this is cool. and I could get knocked out of the tournament for it, right? So if I, you know, I should probably just get up. If it's going to take me 4 hours to get to the bathroom because I've been lunging all day, maybe that's what I'm going to do, and I still got a chance to stay in this tournament and keep my dignity.
I just don't know. I just don't understand. You know, a lot of it's attention. You know, he craves attention. I don't care what anybody says. This guy loves the attention. You know, and the prop bets, you know, it's sheer boredom, I think. These people are just bored with these poker tournaments. And, you know, when you win an $18 million tournament earlier in your life, you know, you need something to... goes back to the $1.6 billion, you know what I mean? Am I going to be lunging around and peeing at poker tables if I win $1.6 billion because I'm sure bored with everything I'm doing? Maybe I don't want to win the $1.6 billion if it means I got to urinate in public. You know? Just come on, guys.
All right, so my next question, how long is it going to take for him to shake this? No, seriously, I mean, because you remember, you go back, all of us went to school at some point, right? And all of us know there's some kid that deuced in his pants, right? And you go back to the reunion, and they're still calling him Deuce, right?
I don't know.
25, 30 years, and the guy can't...
still calling him Deuce. I don't know anybody who did that.
We're going to be at his induction in the Hall of Fame and going, hey, guys, I'm voting for Pisser this year.
He's number one. He's number one.
Really, I think it's going to be a long time for him to shake this.
I don't.
You know, you walk through the halls of the World Series Poker, you know, you have all these fanboys that are walking around looking at people, you know, but, you know, people are going to, like, you know, the next time he does that, there's going to be 27 people in that one long hallway down the Amazon room. They're going to go, hey, Antonio, bathroom's over there in case you need it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And then, oh, their friends are going to, oh, and we're all like.
They'll be like, I'd shake your hand, but I know where your hand's been.
Yes, exactly. See, all that kind of stuff. He's going to have to deal with that for the rest of his career.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man.
Well, unless there's an elaborate scheme for him to get a Depends endorsement.
That's right.
Or maybe he's got his own kind of piss at the table in a non-disqualification way product that he's getting ready to launch.
Well, the Stadium Pal.
Yes.
That would have helped him.
Yeah.
How do you not wear the Stadium Pal if you're doing something like this? I mean, seriously, you think it out. How much was this, you know, I didn't see the story. I just saw your write-up. How much was the prop bet for?
I don't think it was disclosed, okay. But he said it was significant.
Yeah, well, then you get a Stadium Pal and you put it on. Yeah. You know, the people have thought of this years ago and they weren't getting anything for it. They just wanted to sit at the game longer.
Well, maybe you don't think. I mean, I haven't lunged ever. Have you ever lunged?
No, I don't lunge.
Let alone for 48 hours, maybe you don't think about the fact that you're just going to be, like, totally wrecked.
Yeah, maybe.
And not be able to make it to the restroom.
I don't know. That prop bet would
maybe
be on my mind.
Maybe it wasn't poor planning. Maybe
it
was just not understanding what this was going to do to your
body.
Yeah,
poor planning is right.
So anyhow, kids at home, next time you do a 48-hour lunge bet, take the proper precautions.
Yeah, we're a Stadium Pal.
Right.
Hey, any updates? Mohegan Sun in Connecticut will host an Antioch Poker Tour Championship event April 2nd to the 10th. The nine-event series ends with an $1,100 buy-in main event, the winner of which will appear on the cover of Antiup Magazine. For more details and a complete schedule, visit antiupmagazine.com/Mohegan Sun and stay tuned for more announcements on 2016 Antiup Poker Tour locations.
Woohoo!
Very exciting, my home state, Connecticut.
Yes, I'm excited about getting up there. It's one of the few casinos I haven't been to yet, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Scratch that off the poker bucket list. And, but no, very excited. We've been working on this for a while, and actually we've been able to announce it for a while, but we just want to get ducks in the row. So.
Right, right. Beautiful casino, of course.
Yes.
You're going to love it.
I know we have a lot of listeners up in that area, so
yeah,
you know,
you're going to love it.
Hope to see a big turnout for it.
And one final reminder that Antiup's Restock the Shelves Charity Food Bank Initiative with Blue Shark Optics is Monday. That's January 18th, just in case people are listening at another time period, 2016. Though some events take place starting this weekend. Find details on a venue near you by visiting antiupmagazine.com/restock. And if we don't have a venue near your house, feel free to buy some food anyhow and drop it off at a food bank in your area.
That's right. You don't have to come out to do good things. So.
Right. No, that's absolutely right.
Got to go to the grocery store anyhow, right?
So. Yep. Might as well get something. Get something good for them, too.
Yeah. None of those stewed mushrooms
stuff. Yeah, we don't want any of that. Boiled
Brussels
sprouts. All right, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-424-6145 or emails us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, which specializes in poker odds and math at poker911.net. Comes from Jason W., says he's 42 years old, has been playing poker, or some form of poker, ever since he was a kid. Usually plays 4-8 Omaha, 8 with a half kill, sometimes 6-12 Omaha full kill, or 3-6 or 4-8 Hold'em. Plays pretty tight when he does play no limit. Been tracking his wins and losses for the past 7 years. Never had a winning year. I usually lose 5 to 10 grand a year. I have the money, and it really isn't about the cash. I don't usually go on tilt, but I do tend to play more and chase lost money if I have a big losing session. I'm tired of losing. Something needs to change for 2016, and I'm weighing my options. I could stop playing and have an extra 5 to 10 grand to spend on bowling balls. Woo-hoo! Jason, that's it right there. Stop right there. I don't have to talk about it anymore.
Yeah, we'll say again, I had to heavily edit this down. So he part of it was that he enjoys the show, and particularly that we bring bowling up every
time. Yes.
Or I should say that you bring up bowling.
He says he could play only tournaments to limit his losses. He could set a strict buy-in amount, limit himself to $100 buy-in and then a $60 rebuy, and if he loses, go home. I know this isn't sound poker because if the game is good, then it is good and you should play. I could set a time limit to play, same issue, and I think probably the worst choice is I seem to lose more when I am playing and impressed for time because I need to be somewhere. Obviously, quitting will probably yield the most net profit. Other than quitting, what do you think my best option to limit my losses is? So, one, before you quit, we have a home game once a month. No, I'm kidding. But the bowling ball thing, I love that. Email me about some bowling conversations, Jason. I want to talk to you about some of this. My biggest recommendation is get a coach. Because
that's actually a good one.
If you're losing $5,000 to $10,000, you're doing something wrong, and you could take that money.
Just to qualify, he said $5,000 to $10,000. I just assumed he meant $5,000 to $10,000.
Yeah, there's no way he's losing $5 a year. So
whatever.
I'm assuming it's $5,000 to $10,000.
Go ahead.
If you're losing a maximum of $10,000 a year, okay, you could easily get a coach for unbelievably small fraction of that. He will stop the leaks, or she will stop the leaks in your game, and you will learn how to win or at least break even. And then you'll enjoy the game, you'll save money, and we have two people who write for us who are coaches in the magazine. We're always getting students from our magazine. Easily, you know, these guys can turn you around. And probably, you know, the other thing too is he's at all different kinds of levels here. He'll play 4-8, half kill, 6-12, full kill, 3-6, 4-8, and then some of the one. Maybe focus, you know.
I think a lot of it has to do with available tables, too.
Oh, I understand, but maybe if your game's not there, and which one's your biggest leak, don't play it just because it's the only one's available either.
Right.
You know, I like the idea of just playing tournaments. If you enjoy tournaments that much, you do limit your losses. Then you know if you cash 1 in 10 times, you're doing okay. That's not too bad, and you might probably get your money back, or at least, you know, 2 or 3 times in 10, maybe.
Well, tournaments, you have a fixed spending amount.
Yeah.
That isn't based on... It's not a detriment, right?
Right.
I mean, the detriment is, he knows it, too. You know, hey, if I lose $100, I go home, or if I play for 3 hours, I go home, whether I'm winning or losing, and he recognizes those are both bad ideas because you could be in a really good game, and that doesn't make sense.
Right.
Or you could be in a really bad game and you're sticking there until your 3 hours is up. So tournaments, at least you've got a fixed amount. Hey, if it's a $100 tournament, you know, you're paying $100. And it doesn't matter whether the game is good or not.
Right.
You gotta play it, right?
Right. So. I think that getting a tournament, you know, get a coach and play in tournaments might be the first way to go. If the coach is, really focus toward cash games or whatever, then maybe that's what you want. You got to decide what you want to do the most first and then find the coach for that, I think. But I really think a coach is so reasonable. If you're going to lose, like I said, if you could possibly lose 10 grand every year and money's no problem, get a coach. You know, these guys are, they've been doing it. They're a coach usually because they've been doing it for a living for years and they know how to do it, you know, and they're going to watch you play. They're going to make you keep a diary. You're going to figure out what you're doing wrong together. and you're going to plug those leaks, and then you're going to save so much money, and then you're probably going to be a winning player, and it's going to be, you know, sky's the limit after that. Really, get a coach.
Yeah, I would say for our listeners that don't have this much money and don't think they can afford a coach, some of the things that I kind of told Jason. One, you know, it's really tough to beat the rake at 3-6 and 4-8.
Yes, that's true too.
Even at Omaha. So, I mean, you're, if you can focus on that 6-12 Omaha game, you might have a better chance of beating the rake. It might not be that you're that bad of a player. It just means you're playing a game that can't be beat.
Yeah.
So there's that to consider, right? And then we kind of use those. I like that he brought up the bowling, because I used the bowling analogy, because I was never a Chris Cosenza level, but I used to bowl three leagues in high school, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I saw great parallels between my growing as a bowler and growing as a poker player. You know, when you both start out in these things, or really anything, right? You don't have any technique, you don't have any idea what you're doing, right? You just go out and do it, right?
Right.
And so you feel like you're doing good because you're enjoying it, right? And you don't really know what's good or bad necessarily. And then you get more serious, right? So then you start reading, or you get a coach or somebody, and they really have to break you down to build you back up. I don't know if you experienced that. I always did, right?
So oh, absolutely.
I had really bad bowling form. Then I got a coach, and then my average sucked for the next couple of months. But then it got better. You know, it just took some time. And same with poker. The example I gave him is back before I really knew what I was doing. I would play any suited king. That was like aces for me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And this is the same thing he said. He's watched people win with these crap cards that he knows better now not to play. And my point was, you know, how many times did I hit flushes with kings back then? Not a lot, but I remember hitting flushes with kings.
Yeah.
And now if you never play a suited king, guess how many times you're going to hit a flush with a suited king? Never, right?
Right.
So it doesn't mean it's bad. You're a better player now. You're just not doing the bad habits that you get lucky with. So, you know, it's a mind game, I think, to some degree. But the other thing, too, he's way ahead of other people, right? I actually had a lot out, but he's kept really good records. I don't know how detailed they got into, and I told him, you know, hey, are you keeping details on what time of day, how you're feeling, things going through your mind? That kind of stuff might help. But he's keeping records. I don't keep records.
Right.
And certainly if he gets a coach, as you suggested, coach is going to love the fact that he's done this already, right? So yeah, I got something to start with. So.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, the same thing with the, you know, you're talking about when you first start out something, you're passionate about it, but you don't really know what you're doing. Same thing with bowling, like you said. I mean, you start out throwing a straight ball, but all of a sudden you're like, wow, I'm knocking pins over, but why am I not knocking that pin over? Well, it's right. Because the ball's deflecting. Well, you need to throw a curveball. Oh, you need to throw the ball curve. You make the ball curve. Well, how do you do that? Well, now your average is going to suck again, because now you're going trying to figure out the curves, and then you get a coach, and the coach is like, okay, your curve's okay, but your approach is horrible. You're not going to be consistent. So then they break you down, and it's the same thing. Poker, you know, he's going to find the, okay, so what do you do when you first go to a poker room? X. Okay, well, you know what? You should be doing Y. Why? Because I said so. You know, and that's just what it is. And I really, the coach has done it all. They've been through it. And our coaches in our magazine are very successful. You know, I mean, not just as players, but as coaches. I mean, it's remarkable. They have their own channels or, you know, whatever. I mean, on these Twitches and all these other things. I don't know what they are, but they're really smart. And you can save a ton of money by just paying a little money. It's, you know.
Sure.
I would do it. Hey, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com and we'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. Our good buddy Doc Frank wrote in. I love it when he plays. He always sends us something. You know, something always happens.
He always gets upset at the table, too. I think it's funny because he's like the most mild-mannered, nice guy ever, right?
Yep.
But things just tick him off sometimes. Yeah.
He never gets mad in the home game.
No. I don't think he gets mad at the poker room either. I think he gets home and he gets upset.
Yeah. I wonder if he gets home and gets upset after our home game.
Oh, maybe he does. And then can't write us because it's our home game.
Right? Yeah, their home game. Yeah. You don't write about that. But. All right, so I was playing 1-1, no limit, at a Florida card room. Dealer burned a card before the turn and then noticed that the next two cards in a row were face-up. The floor ruled that one single turned-up card would be ignored, but two constitute a missed deal. The money was backed out of the pot and returned to the players. Why is one turned-up card ignored, but two a cause for a missed deal? After the dealer backed out the money and returned it to the players, he moved the button. I protested, saying the button needed to stay put. The dealer said the hand was ruled dead and that he must now deal the next hand, which required that the button be moved. It's hard for me to believe that the dealer was correct in moving the button after a misdeal. I've seen misdeals dozens of times, but the button stayed put. What's the correct procedure?
Elliot says, multiple boxed, i.e. exposed cards during a hand constitute virtually the only acceptable post-action misdeal. Too many boxed cards will affect the play of the hand, so the line was drawn at one boxed card. It is too difficult to determine if one or more players saw that the cards were face up before the deck was shuffled or placed in the shuffle machine. This is information that no player should be able to act upon, as it can severely handicap the players that don't know what the face-up cards are. As for the button, it should never be moved after a misdeal, else a couple players will be skating on blinds and one player will miss the button entirely. It's quite acceptable and sometimes necessary to make sure that the supervisor be brought over to rectify button placement errors.
Yep.
Yeah, I was really shocked when I heard that they moved the button.
I'd call the floor immediately again.
I don't know if that's a new dealer that just, you know, whatever, but that was woohoo!
Yep. Damn. Come on back, dealer. Come on back. I'm the button on this hand. I am not losing the button because your dealer screwed up. And then screwed up again. It's no way. No way. Do over means you do everything the same.
Can I have the next seat change, please? In the opposite direction of the pushes for the table.
Oh, man.
It was good, though. I had heard, I think, maybe Sam or Jody in the past explained the two box cards. I couldn't remember. So it was a good reminder.
Yeah.
It's just a fairness thing. So.
Yep.
One's no big deal, but two apparently is.
We got a brand new O'Malley's Move, episode 101. So it's like poker 101. Here it comes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're seated in a low $10 buy-in, 10-player sit-and-go. There are some very new players to this game and some players that know what they're doing. We've lost two players. It's early in the third round, and we're up 500 units. We sit with 5,500. Blinds are 75-150 with 30-minute levels. Top three get paid $60, $30, $10. The blinds post, and we're under the gun with two red tens. There are two bigger stacks than we have. We make it 450 to go, our standard raise. It's folded to an MP who makes the call. This player has a smaller stack than us and is fairly new to the game of poker. The button calls. This player is probably the best at the table, knows when to fold and when he can push someone off their hand. He is the chip leader with 7,000. The blinds fold. With 1350 in the pot, the flop is 6-4 deuce. All spades. Ugh. What an ugly flop. And here's more bad news, we're first to act. But we did raise preflop, and we do have an overpair. There's a chance we have the best hand at this point, or at the very least we could represent an even bigger hand than what we have. Our stack is now at 50-50, that's well over 30 big blinds. We put a bet of 800 into the pot. Both players call relatively quickly. The turn is the 5 of clubs. The pot has ballooned to 3750. We took our chance and it didn't pan out. We are ready to give up the hand. We check and are surprised when both players check behind us. This is getting more interesting. Maybe we're good. The pot is the same, and the river is the 9 of hearts. We think about making a bet, but ultimately decide not to. Maybe we're playing too scared? The MP checks and the button makes a bet of 2250. We have 4250 left. If we call and lose, we're down to 2,000. What's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This week's prize is 1 month of free poker strategy videos from One Hand at a Time. No more poker instructional videos online. AntiUp listeners save $30 by registering at oneandatatime.com/antiup. This comes from Chris Quote Ramora.
Quote? What does that mean? That's not his real name.
Maybe it's a pseudonym. He doesn't want his. I see. No, it's a Ramora on Poker Radius. I'm sorry.
Okay.
That makes more sense.
There you go. Make
sense. A good partner where our any approved discussions are.
So, gotcha. All right.
All right. So he says it's a dime 20 cent no limit NLTH home.
I think he just meant Ellen Holder. No, Ellen Limit. Home Alone. I don't know.
Alright. Well, maybe it's a new game we're going to find out. I don't think so. Right. So, anyhow, the stakes of winning this game is are a dime 20 cents, right?
Okay.
He says, we had 8 players earlier, but it's late and everybody else had busted out or otherwise left. Typical buy-in is $20, but several people, including me, bought in for around 40 tonight. Ooh.
Okay.
You can tell there's no Powerball drawing that night. I topped off at some point, and I'm sitting down. I'm down about $7. I decided this will be the last hand of the night. You know, nothing good comes from
no.
the hand, right? It says, player's position stacks, and these are not real names, in case you were concerned. And the small blind Jack has $45, and the big blind Bill has $6. Under the gun is Dakota for $45, and dealer is me, $43. I'm going to guess that's our hero reward, right?
Okay.
Not somebody named, fake name, me. That would be an awesome name. Who are you in love with? I'm in love with me. Alright, so Dakota, under the gun, checks his cards and quickly folds. And I look down at Ace of Diamonds, Queen of Clubs.
Shove. It's the last hand of the night. I do not want... Everybody plays the last hand of the night, so I don't want some crappy two cards playing against my ace queen, and
it's kind of a anticlimactic end of the night, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't care. I want to win. I don't want to lose. I don't care. Oh, I lost, but it was climactic. Who cares? I think we should go with shove.
All right, so I'm going to not disagree with you necessarily because I get it, because no one's going to call us unless they have a monster hand, and in that case, then it's a bad idea.
Yeah, we still have Ace Queen.
But in the spirit of having fun and playing, that's ridiculous.
All right, well, what's a typical raise, you think, in this?
He says his typical raise is 3x.
All right, I'm making it like 10x. I'm making if we're at 10 cent, 20 cent, I'm making it like $2 to go at least.
So there we go. So we'll make it a ridiculous raise, but not the most ridiculous.
Right. Like $2 to go.
Right. All right. All right. So he says his typical raise is 3x, but people often don't play the last hand, quote unquote, reasonably in these games, or any game for that matter. Right? So I bumped it up slightly to $1.
See, that's not enough. I don't know if the $2 can be enough either, but $1, I mean. Come on, you got $50 in front of you. Who's not going to throw a dollar in?
For the last hand of the night, yes.
Yeah. Although, I think in our home game, guys will fold. You know, Fasto is sitting on a profit for the night. Well, he's never playing the last hand.
Right, exactly. Because what everybody does is count down their chips right for that last hand.
Yeah. So it might work.
Confident, hey, I've got some money this hand. I'm not going to risk it. You're out. If you're like way down, you're playing, you could have like, you know, deuce four and you're in there splashing around, right?
Yep.
All right, well, I'll say his standard raise, I would suggest in this game, should be a dollar to begin with, I think. I don't think the 3X works for cash games.
No, not.
I mean,
no
it's
way.
Like a $6 and a 1-2 game.
All right.
It doesn't do anything.
I agree.
All right, so if you start at 1, then you'll do bump it up because it's the last hand of the night. And you
definitely.
Want to make, think about it. That's $2. That's what we came up with, right?
Definitely.
All right, both blinds call. So it's three-handed. And the flop comes Ace of Clubs, Four of Hearts, Four of Spades. Small blind bets $3. And this guy is described, considers himself an old Italian gambler from Jersey. Ooh, speaks your language.
I'm not from Jersey.
Well, but you're an old Italian gambler.
Yeah, well, I'm not from Jersey. And I'm not really old either.
We're pretty old.
Yeah, if you stood next to me, they'd want to know who's older. I think you'd win that contest.
You know what I really think is interesting about the order of your complaints about this comparison?
It's that I'm not a whole person.
Jersey number one.
Oh, yeah.
Old person number two, and you haven't even got to the point that I'd call you a gambler.
That's true. I'm not a gambler. So how none of this is me other than Italian, and I'm only half Italian.
Isn't that enough? All right, anyhow, he's an old Italian gambler from Jersey. He's only played at our home game one other time, but is one of the more aggressive players at the table.
Okay.
And so, oh boy, you're going to love this. So the action comes to the big blind Bill, and he calls, he calls Dakota, who already folded over, to look at his hand.
What?
Bill has already busted out and bought back in with Dakota's money. They collectively decide that he should go all in with his remaining $5.
You can't do that.
You can't do any of this. But it's a home game, so stuff happens, right?
Oh, man.
Yeah, I would strongly suggest that if this is going on in your home game, that you politely let people know, hey, this is not cool. I know, yeah, we're having fun. Cool. There's all kinds of ways we can have fun and stretch the rules a little bit, but two players to a hand is not one of them that I'm willing to accept, even in home games.
Yeah, that's just not
even right. If it is your money on the table. If it's your money on the table, it should be in your stack, and you should be playing your cards. Right?
Yep, that's just not acceptable at all.
Now, I guess in the terms of the hand, the only thing I don't mind is the guy's only got $6.
Still. Right.
I understand. I'm not.
It's just not right. I mean, you're talking to a person who freaked out over taking 50 cents out of a hand every hand to the horse race thing in a home game. I'm not going to be happy if someone's taking $6 away from me.
All right, so here it says, I don't believe him. And I don't know which him. Both of them, I guess. And Instacall, the show strength. Oh, I guess I should have paused and asked you what you were going to do there. But. I can't imagine you're going to fool for the
phone. No, but I also think I might re-raise.
Yes.
You know, isolate and. Oh, didn't you say at the beginning, though, they had. There's not that many players in the hand?
There's only three left. And yeah. And this guy's all in, obviously, and the other player has us covered by $2 at the beginning of the hand.
I probably would re-raise here. Somehow. Maybe even show.
Shut it down to this one guy, right?
Yeah, shut it down to this one guy and be happy taking a $7 or $8 pot.
Right. I think I agree. All right. So instead of insta-call, we would have insta-raised.
Wow.
No, that's what I said we would have done.
Okay. Yeah, we would have. I thought you said we were insta-raised. So I'm like, what?
No.
We would
have insta-called, and then we back.
Right. Okay, good.
All right. I think the round is over, and I'm about to deal, but didn't realize Jack has raised to $10.
Ooh. I feel like, well, Jack, if he...
It's a small one, by the way.
Yeah, small one. So if he's a small blind, that means he check-raised us.
Yes, he did.
So I don't think it's an ace.
He didn't check-raise us. He check-raised
the... Or he check-raised the table.
Abbott and Costello here.
Yeah. I think that... it doesn't feel like an ace. I think an ace would have bet it. You know? Maybe he check-raises the ace. But does he really think that someone's going to bet that ace and a paired board? He might have a four. This is scary now. Now I'm scared.
Four is more likely. If you have a four, you're probably less likely to want to bet out here. If you have an ace, you're more likely to.
Yeah, you want to protect it or whatever, get some money, get some value.
I also think I'm less likely to want to raise here, though. If I got a guy, I got one guy all in, I got another guy on the hook here.
Well, let me ask you this. Wouldn't you want to raise? Because now if somebody calls that ace 4-4 after somebody bets out, and you have a four, I think you got this guy on the hook and he's not going to go anywhere, so I would raise now after check. I think I would check raise a four here, and I would check raise it.
All right.
Only because one guy bets, another guy calls, and that guy goes all in and he calls. So I'm like, hey, this guy, if he called that all in, he's got to have an ace. And if the other guy went all in, one of them has to have an ace. If I have a four, they're not going to fold. So I think I might raise here. So yeah, he might have a four. Shoot. All right, I can't believe I'm going to say this. I might fold. I might fold only because it's hand of the week now, but if I'm in this game, I might still fold. I only have $40. That's a quarter of my stack. Last hand of the night, I'm down 7 already.
What about raising to 15? So then the min raise on top of his 5, and if he shoves, then I feel more confident that he has a 4. Although, you could do that with an ace, too.
Yeah.
But we don't even have the best ace. We have the third right. best ace.
All right.
Although I can't imagine this guy flopped a boat and getting all frisky. But right. Rather than folding, I think I might want to see how strong he is. If he just calls, then I feel a little bit better about it. But if he raises shoves at that point, like insta-shoves, then yeah, okay. I spent the $10, and I'm done now.
Well, here's the deal. We were the one that raised preflop.
Because it's four-handed, too. It's, you know, he could have a four, but an ace is pretty strong in this spot, right?
But we raised preflop, right?
We did. Well, so, if you want to call a 3X raise, a raise.
But we raised. So we were the ones that took the initiative. There's no way they're putting us on a four. So if we
That's true.
If we call this other guy's all in, and then this guy now bets and raises us, we can't make it a, you know, we make it five more, he's going to be like, you don't have a four?
And so what, we could have an ace.
Yeah, I know, but the guy making it 10 probably has a four or an ace.
Right, you could have an ace, but unless he has ace king or ace four, we've got a beat. Or, yeah. Well, split pot if it's ace queen.
I don't know if I'm going to.
I mean, I don't want to fold if this guy has A6 and thinks that his hand is strong, which I would feel strong with my hand there, too, if I had A6 and a four-handed or three-handed game now.
Yeah. I think I'm just going to call, though.
Plus, I'm in the small blind, so it's easy for me to sell the fact that I had four. I have a four. If I don't have a four, I have an ace. It's fine, right?
Well, here's the deal. He's small blind, so if I call, I think I close out the betting, and he has to go first now, next street.
Oh, that's a good point, too.
So maybe I just call and see, instead of putting in more and then opening up the betting and watch him shove, and I lost an extra five for nothing.
Yeah,
I just call and then see what happens on the turn.
All right, there we go. I think that's the best plan.
All right, let's do it. Let's just call.
All right.
But we're weary.
Yes.
All right.
He calls. All right.
He calls?
So we called, yeah.
Okay.
All right, the turn is the 10 of hearts, and now our ace of clubs, 4 of hearts, 4 of spades, 10 of hearts, and our lone remaining opponent bets $10.
I'm going to call. Only because at this point, if we were thinking about, like you said earlier, raising 5, now it's only $5 more than that, and I still close the betting out because the other guy's all in. So I think aces and 4s with a queen kicker four-handed is pretty decent. And I'm not in the only thing I'm in danger of now really is the 4 or a flush getting there on the river with hearts. So there's no reason for me to just bet my entire stack. So I think I'll just call.
Okay. I think I will too. I still feel like I'm good here.
Yeah, but I'm trying to control the pot here.
I would raise it. Yeah, I feel good about my check call spot here.
Yeah.
All right. So our hero says I still think I'm ahead, so I call.
Yeah.
All right, the river is a, quote, harmless deuce of spades. So the final board is ace of clubs, 4 hearts, 4 spades, 10 of hearts, deuce of spades, and our opponent bets $15.
Ugh. I mean, you think he'd slow down, so he either clearly has an ace or a 4. It's just whether or not if his ace is like ace 10 and he's sucked
on
it.
Yeah, so the kind of the problem with the ace now is now we have to start thinking about what aces we can beat.
Yeah.
Because he's not scared of us, obviously. He keeps betting, right? So, and the only thing we could beat is an ace that's weaker than ours. So, ace jack, ace nine. At that point, I'm almost narrowing it down to that.
Yeah,
I think the guy's going to slow down, right?
And you think
ace nine? I think he'll slow down.
And ace jack might re-raise pre-flop in such a small game like this. You know, last hand of the night, but maybe not. Maybe he just calls. The thing is that we didn't make it a big enough raise pre-flop, and it just smells like a 4 now. And I'd hate to fold $63. I can play 15. You know, I'm basically getting a 5-1 on my money or whatever. You know, for aces up with a queen kicker. It's hard to fold. But then again, we've put in 20-something bucks out of our 40-something. So half our pot's already up. Our stack's already in there. It's hard to fold for $15.
Plus, we started the night with $40, too, so we were only up $3 before this hand started, so.
Well, didn't you say he was down 7?
He topped off or something? Weird. He said he bought in for 40, but he's down 7.
Huh. So he topped off, so.
Oh, yeah, topped off. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So, all right,
yeah.
So, but even so.
Right, so we're chasing losses in here.
5-1 on my money, and I got aces up with a really good kicker. It's hard to fold here. It just smells like a 4. I suppose I could fold and live with it, but it just smells like a 4 because we didn't make it a big enough raise, and the way he played it, this guy played it. Check raises. How many people check raise with an ace on the board, and you got a guy all in, another guy calling behind you? You know, you don't do that with an ace. You don't check raise an ace, you know. He bet it out on the last hand of the night like that. You bet that. You want to get value for it. So it feels like a 4. I want to make the right decision here, and I know it's hand of the week. Hand of the week generally means we lost, so I'm going to fold because of that. But if I'm in the moment and I haven't known that this guy actually had a 4, putting it together, it feels a lot like a 4. But then again, like you said, we're only beating a bluff now. The only ace we beat that's maybe legitimate in this is a suited ace. Or an ace 9, you know, that's not really raisable. But a suited ace might play, like an ace tray of spades or something. I don't know. And that could be why he bet out, too, because he hit 4 spades on the No, it was hearts. So, yeah. Nah, so I don't even know. I mean, I guess I'm just going to fold just because it's the end of the week, but if I was really playing, I guess that's too good a value on my money there. I mean, it's too good of a price. It's 5-1 on my money, right?
Yeah, so it's really tough to fire 3 bullets without something, right?
Yeah. But he could think his ace is good. That's the thing.
Oh, and yeah, but then he's got to think what we have. Why are we calling, right?
Yeah.
Unless he puts us on a weaker ace and that we just don't believe him. That's really the only thing that would make me want to fire that third time.
Because we raised preflop.
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna call.
Yeah, I think we got 2 pieces of information that changed my mind here. We got his third barrel, and we didn't improve.
Yeah.
Those 2 things, I think, contribute to me saying, all right, I gave the old college try and just didn't work out for me this time.
I'm going to call, but as I call, I'm going to say, show me the 4. That's what I'm going to do.
Awesome. All right. Let's see. Our hero says, I don't know what he's betting on, but I feel like I have to call at this point. He's aggressive. And what did he call or raise with the beast me here? It seems like a fairly safe board for my hand. I put in a final $15, making the pot of $78 on a board of ace of clubs, 4 of hearts, 4 of spades, 10 of hearts, 10 of spades, or 2 of spades, sorry. I flip over my ace queen, not too excited about it, but not tormented either. He shows 4 of diamonds, deuce of clubs.
Oh, he rivers a boat, too.
Flop trips in a river boat.
Oh.
Says, this is why I don't normally play the last hand of the night. I may not have played the hand beautifully, but I also don't think in any other situation Jack would have played deuce 4 offsuit for a raise. Yeah, last night of the hand, that happens.
Yeah, everybody wants to get even or run stuck, or is there one last chance to play for another month, or in our case, 6 months? So. Yeah, that's tough. I mean, it makes sense when you think about it. You only made it. What did he make it raise preflop? Was it 3x?
60 cents.
Yeah, so I mean, 60 cents when you've got 50 in front of you or whatever. I mean, you're going to call with any 2 cards. So either you just don't play the last hand, or if you have aces, you shove, or if you have ace queen, you make it something ridiculous like $3 to go or something, and maybe he folds.
Yeah, I think if I go back to the preflop, now the more I think about it, I would have raised it $6.
Yeah.
Because that puts the one guy that has $6 all in if he... Well, it doesn't put him all in. He can choose to not
right,
do it,
right.
But that would be my goal. That would be my value goal there. I'd be happy to flip with that guy knowing that that's the ceiling of my thing. I want to get some value. And $6 is pretty significant that somebody's not going to play garbage with me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's,
and if
yeah.
somebody does have a big hand, then you know I still got a chance to get away from it at some point if... I do get called by one of those players or raised.
And we don't know what the guy all in had, right? We don't, it doesn't matter, but...
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter, but we never even found out. Yeah.
Yeah,
see, that's a good idea, is it really just make it a bunch, take it down, be happy you took down the last hand of the night.
But I think it's more than just making a bunch. I'm trying to induce that short stack to like, hey, it's last night of the hand, let's put it in.
Yeah.
And I'd be happy racing with him.
Yeah, like for $6.
He's probably pretty good against that guy.
Yeah, that's a good decision, too.
Interesting, though.
All right. Hey, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.